Dave Henderson has joined us on Sports Byline USA. We're talking about his fine 14-year career with the Boston Red Sox. He goes to his first World Series. That was 1986. And take me through that series and leading up to game number five, which was really the key point and the turning point in that series, Dave.
Well, you got to remember, I was a backup player to Tony Armas in center field. I was more of a defensive player for insurance purposes. And Tony Armas went on the wall and twisted his ankle in about the fifth inning. And I'm coming into the ball game, and this is game five, and we're down by a couple of runs in the playoffs. And the weird thing about it is Bobby Gritch, a real good friend of mine, hit a ball off the wall, and it went off my glove for a two-run home run. It put the Angels ahead. And I thought I was the GOAT because, remember, if you're the defensive guy, you go over the wall, you're supposed to catch the ball. And I didn't. But all turned out well because I come up in the, ninth inning. And as every little kid wants to think about, you get to hit a home run and win the game. And, of course, I hit a two-run home run to put us ahead to come back and get that victory in game five. And after that, there was no contest. We went back to Boston and beat the Angels, 100-0 in two ball games. So, so there was no contest after that.
On that home run pitch, were you looking for a particular pitch from Donnie Moore?
No. When you're a baseball player and you're a backup player, when you're only playing, three innings a night and you're getting an AB off the closer every night, you don't have much of a chance as a hitter. And I think I was just up there trying to survive. And once I fouled off a couple of fastballs, I knew I was in trouble. And a short story is I got 2-2 count, and I looked around the field, and everybody was in their starting blocks, like the track meet to run out on the field. And I started thinking, how am I going to get to the dugout, when I strike out? Because, you don't have much chance of a closer when you're a backup player. And then I noticed, I got a bat in my hand. I got no problem getting to the dugout with a bat in my hand. I'm going to take a few people out after I strike out. But, he threw a couple more fastballs and did a split finger that I got out in front of and hit out of the ballpark. And, the rest is history.
Everybody pretty much knows the story. Donnie Moore sometime later then committed suicide, and a lot of people say it had to do with that home run that you hit off of him. I don't buy into that theory, and I read the story in Sports Illustrated that was the in-depth look at all that went on with that. What thoughts did you have after all of that came down on him?
Well, the thing about it was I was kind of boxed into a corner because I knew he had problems, alcohol, drugs, and, marital problems and things like that, but I look like a jerk if I come out and tell the truth on his life versus, him committing suicide. So I kept my mouth shut it's been 20 years now. And his wife came out and told the whole story in Sports Illustrated, which was a big burden off me because I used to go to restaurants, me and my wife, and people used to whisper, that's the guy that killed Donnie Moore. That's upsetting to her because, you don't want people saying that in restaurants. And of course, I knew the truth, had nothing to do with baseball. Real life kills people, not baseball. But it's a big relief in our household that this real story came out, 20 years later.
What you're being modest about is the fact that you were really the catalyst for them doing the turnaround and going on and making it to the World Series, because the Angels come back to tie it up at 6-6 in the bottom of the ninth, but in the 11th inning, you hit the sacrifice fly that would prove to be the margin of victory. When you look back about going to the World Series, do you take some sense of satisfaction, Dave, in helping to get the team there?
Of course. I mean, every ball player wants to do his part and, contribute. And I can say from the bottom of my heart that, I did everything possible for us to go to the World Series, to win a World Series. And people always ask me to compare home runs, the one in Game 5 in the ninth inning versus the one in Game 6 of the World Series in the 10th inning. And I always say the difference is there's a guy basically pinch hitting in Game 5, just swinging. And there's a guy in the World Series that's hitting about 400 and has his stroke, and the other team is trying to stay away from him. That's a bigger home run in my book when they're trying to stay away from you and not let you hit home run, and you do it in the 10th inning to win a World Series.
Okay, let me take you into the World Series 1986 against the Mets. I'm going to go right to the game number 6, which was played in New York against the Mets. And I know where I was, and I think there are certain things that happen in sports, Dave, over the years where you remember where you were when Cal Ripken Jr. broke the record, that sort of thing. And I was in a restaurant on Pier 39 having dinner, and I looked up, and I saw the ball go right through Bill Buckner's legs. And it just took the breath out of me. What was it like for the Boston Red Sox when that happened?
Well, I think as players on that field, we like to start a little bit earlier than the ball going through Bill Buckner's legs. Remember, we had a 2-1 lead,
right,
with two outs,
right,
with nobody on base before all that happened. And I'm sitting out there in center field watching all these base hits and things like that and saying, wait a minute, what happened to our bullpen? So they scored two runs and tied it up. And I knew we were in trouble because we had used most of our bullpen to keep the game tied. And then the ball went through Bill Buckner's legs and they win. So it was kind of weird that everybody blamed Bill Buckner when it's a team sport. And our bullpen, you know, gave up the two runs. But, you know, everybody remembers the Bill Buckner thing because that's what everybody focused on. But as a team, we all noticed that our bullpen gave up those two runs with two outs in the 10th inning.
I had the opportunity to have both Mookie Wilson and Bill Buckner with me on the show at the same time. And it was wonderful to see, first of all, the friendship that those two had and then listen quietly to the perspective that they each had. And I thought, you know, after it was over with, Dave, it gave me such great insight to what you athletes are really, really like. I mean, the fans and the media and everybody, you know, they dissect everything, but they forget one thing. All of you are human beings trying to give the best that you can at the particular moment. We know that the Mets came back. They win that World Series. Let me go fast forward in your career when you end up with the Oakland A's. That's where our friendship started. You signed as a free agent in Oakland in 1988. You set career highs in batting average, 304, runs 100, hits 154, and you also hit 24 home runs that season. You kind of blossomed a little bit late in your career. Why do you think that was?
Well, I think it's more playing time. The Seattle days, you know, when you lose 100 games, you don't get to play August and September. They bring up the kids and let them have tryout camps. So you have, we call it 4.5 month stats. When I got to Oakland, we were in a pennant race, and I got to play the full year. And, of course, when you're around guys like, you know, Canseco, McGuire, all your numbers are going to be better because there's more people on base when you hit. It's that simple. But I was in my hometown. I'm from Dos Palos, an hour and a half away from Oakland. My family got to watch me. My whole town came to see me. You play in Oakland. So it was a very, very comfortable environment for me to play in.
When I think back about those Oakland A's teams, because I had just come to the Bay Area myself a couple of years earlier, and you were a part of three Oakland A's teams that went to the World Series. You beat the Giants in 89, lost to the Dodgers in 88, and Cincinnati then the following year after beating the Giants. I don't know how to quite describe it. I've tried to describe to people what that group of athletes being down at spring training in particular, and you had Mark McGuire, you had Jose, you had Dwayne Murphy, you had Ricky Henderson, you had the pitching staff with Dave Stewart. I mean, can you put it into perspective what that group of athletes were like?
Well, I think it was one of the best collective athletes and teams in a long time, because when you look at that team, we had 12 to 13 all-stars on the team. And we all look back today and we always say, wow, how did we lose? It's weird how baseball works. And from us, we know that the best team doesn't always win. That's why we love sports. You cannot predict it. Because when we start thinking about us against the Dodgers, you know, it shouldn't have been that close. You know, the Nasty Boys with Cincinnati, they beat us. You know, it shouldn't have been that close. But this is baseball. You can't predict it. When you have 12 All-Stars on a team, you're probably supposed to win. But we look back on that, and we regret that we only won one World Series in that time period when we had a collective of 12 All-Stars on a team.
Talk to me a little bit about the chemistry and just the personality of those teams, because when I think back, knowing Ricky Henderson, knowing yourself, knowing Dwayne Murphy, Dave Stewart, Jose Canseco, and all of the guys there, it was such a different group of guys personality-wise. You go down to spring training and you see Jose's red-hot, souped-up car, and he's out on the town late at night, and then there's Mark McGwire and everything. What was the personality like and the feeling in the clubhouse?
Well, you hit it right on the head. We had a lot of different personalities, but I think one thing we had was myself, Connie Lansford, and Dave Stewart. We were kind of subdued captains. I took care of the outfielders. Connie took care of the infielders, and Stu took care of the pitchers. But I had a load. I had Canseco and Ricky to take care of, and our boss, of course, La Russa. Every time they did something, he got mad at me. But that's the way it worked. But we found a way to get it done. We were wild, crazy. We were a band on tour, basically. We went to hotels and things, and everybody wanted to see us, but the good thing about it, you remember, baseball is entertainment. We were very entertaining. We had a lot of personalities. We hit home runs. We pitched. We played defense. And we had a little a pizzazz, a little hot dog about us. So the fans loved us. And when we traveled, the other cities loved us because we were going to show you something that you hadn't seen before.
Yeah, you guys were rock stars. There were no doubt about it. And when you came to town, it was like rock stars coming to town. The one thing I always wondered about was Tony La Russa, knowing his personality, which is a button-down kind of drill sergeant, serious personality. How did he coexist with all of this?
Well, I had to break him down a little bit because, as you know, I once got traded because I smiled too much. he didn't like that at all. But I told him, it's okay to smile. You can be serious about your job. But we're best of friends now. Over the years, he hated me when I played against him because, you know, you hit a home run in ninth inning to beat the other team and you smile, the other manager's not going to like you. But we became great friends. And he respected my game. He respected my work ethic. And he figured out that smiling was okay, as long as you do your job. But like I said, I kept control over Canseco and Ricky and the other outfielders. And we had one thing in common. We did whatever it took that day to win a game. And that was our main focus, you know. All these rules and all that stuff, and you know how guys have to look down at third base and get signs and all that. We didn't have all that stuff. We just played baseball, do whatever it took that day to win a ball game, and that's what Tony respected.
We have 45 seconds left, Dave, and when you think back on your fine 14-year career, is there one particular moment that's kind of engraved in Dave Henderson's mind?
Well, it's not really baseball. I think my birthday is July 21st, and I was at the Coliseum one time. And, you know, when you're a baseball player, it's a grind every day, and you don't realize it's your birthday. And all of a sudden, you know, 15 or 20 people start lighting candles, you know, singing me happy birthday. And then another pitch came by. It was a couple hundred. Another pitch went by. There was 10,000 people in the bleacher in Oakland with candles and lighters singing me happy birthday. And that's just something I'll never, ever forget. And they stopped the game, and it was like a chorus of 10,000 people singing you happy birthday. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is awfully cool. Dave, I want to thank you. I appreciate our friendship. I always enjoyed spending time with you talking baseball, but just talking about life in general. Thank you for joining us here on Sports Byline. Take care, my friend.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Dave Henderson with us again, fine center fielder who played 14 years, starting out with Seattle as their top draft choice, then went on to Boston and played in his first of four World Series. That was back in 1986 against the New York Mets, and then a brief time with the Giants, but his most success came with the Oakland A's. As you heard him say, I got a lot of playing time at that time, and he went to three straight World Series, winning one of them. That was during the Earthquake World Series against the Crosstown San Francisco Giants. We continue with more of you and Sports Byline.